Yes.
Okay, I didn't. Okay. Well, my name is Wade. I intended to talk about the Paris Hilton thing, but it doesn't seem appropriate right now.
Yeah, so you're right.
How about a little short poem?
No, we're really focused on 9/11 this morning.
It is about 9/11.
Okay, very short.
It's about all the remembers, the this and such. It's called Rant On. Remember when we didn't hear song of war's siren? Remember the this, remember the that. Journalism so yellow and fat. No, you probably can't. Here ends my peaceful rant.
I've got a comment to that. The
all right.
Journalism, it was the Hearst Corporation through which that term came into our vocabulary. And who is the publisher of the Popular Mechanics book?
Right.
The Hearst Corporation. And the subtitle of my book is An Answer to Popular Mechanics and Other Defenders of the Official Conspiracy Theory. And people like to think, oh, Popular Mechanics, you know, that's a very reputable magazine. We've been reading it for years. They've been doing good scientific research. The problem is the head of Hearst fired the artistic director, long-term guy, and the editor-in-chief and brought in a new crew just before they started working on 9/11. So these are not the guys you learned to trust over the years.
That's
and
interesting.
This is yellow journalism at its worst. When you read my book, you'll see they simply lie on every single issue.
Well, just because Hearst is long dearly departed doesn't mean that his legacy has ended, obviously.
That's right.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the variations of belief in the interactions or the involvement of our government in the events of that day. And to believe the official account, of course, means that, there were 19 hijackers coordinated through Al-Qaeda, that they did these things, and it caught everyone very off guard. And there were many crucial failures of our infrastructure that we will be fixing, and, the Patriot Act helps, and increased surveillance helps, and, basically taking away our free society helps to keep us safe.
Yeah.
Now, beyond that, you have, and as you note, actually, in the new Pearl Harbor, there are many other ways to look at it in terms of the involvement and the level of involvement of our government, from the least damning, which would be construction of a false account, sort of using the events as they happened to their advantage to sort of sway public opinion and do what they need to do, on through to the eighth possibility, and these are sort of in a ranked damning order, which would be the White House was fully involved in the planning, and all shades of nuances in between those two.
We have some pretty good clues.
I was going to say, have you actually, through your work with the empirical evidence, narrow field there?
Well, when you see the 9/11 Commission lying about somebody's whereabouts, you can have a pretty good idea they're trying to cover something up.
Mm-hmm.
And the most egregious example of that involves Norman Mineta, the former Secretary of Transportation, who was at the time, and Vice President Cheney. Mineta testified in an open hearing to the 9/11 Commission that when he got down to the underground bunker, the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, at 9:20, Cheney was already there and obviously had been there for a while because he was engaged in ongoing conversations. He tells about a young man coming in and saying that plane is now 50 miles out, then pretty soon it's 30 miles out, pretty soon it's 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand? And Cheney whipped his head around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything different? This was shortly before the Pentagon strike, when the 9/11 Commission, Tim Romer said, so how long was that after you got down there? And he said 5 or 6 minutes. So that would have been, Romer said, 9:25 or 9:26, right. When the 9/11 Commission report came out, nothing is mentioned of that crucial conversation, and the commission says Cheney didn't get down there himself until almost 10 o'clock, perhaps 9:58. Mm-hmm. So they tell about a 40 to 45 minute lie there to make it look like Cheney wasn't there in charge before the Pentagon was struck. And it's also crucial for Flight 93 because so much evidence suggests that the American Air Force shot it down.
Yes.
And they're claiming, well, Cheney didn't even get down there and he didn't hear about it until a minute before it crashed, and he didn't get around to giving the shoot down order till several minutes after it crashed, so we couldn't have shot it down. Well, Richard Clark, the head of counterterrorism, said he got the shoot down order from Cheney about 9:45 or 9:50, in plenty of time to pass it on to the pilots.
So that's something I wanted to ask you about the Pentagon. You know, I remember when I first turned on the news that morning and I saw the plane, you know, the film of the plane hitting the tower, my immediate first thought that popped into my head was, oh my God, we did that. And I always have learned to trust my first instinct, and I've gone with it. But then when I saw that they hit the Pentagon, I started to doubt. I was like, would we go that far? Would we actually bomb the Pentagon? You know, would we hit the Pentagon with a plane? That's going pretty far.
Well, the wing that was under reconstruction?
I think that that's been the focus of a lot of the discussion around 9/11 is what happened at the Pentagon. There wasn't enough destruction. Where did the plane go? The hole wasn't big enough. What really was there a missile? What really happened to the plane if the plane didn't hit it? You know, that's a whole other aspect of, I mean, there's almost like two different groups, one that focuses on the towers and one that focuses on the Pentagon.
I think they're the same.
Yeah,
group.
And that's an area where there has been, as you indicate, a lot of discussion within the 9/11 Truth Movement. But I engage in a lot of that discussion in my critique of Poppy Mechanic's treatment of the Pentagon strike, and show that they do not successfully defend the idea that it was a Boeing 757. I mean, they don't even come close.
It sure doesn't seem to me that a Boeing 767 could have hit and there would be a bigger hole, more damage. Someone told me who was he's a jet pilot. He said, well, it would have vaporized. I'm like, no, that would have made a huge fireball if it vaporized. There wasn't a huge fireball. What? That doesn't make any sense, you know?
But there are a couple points that the 9/11 Truth Movement, everybody agrees on. And that's what I'll focus on in my lecture, that the one thing is the official story says it was Flight 77 under the control of Hani Hanjour. Well, Hani Hanjour could not fly a Piper Cub.
Yeah.
Everybody agrees on that. Instructors wouldn't go up with him a second time. They'd say, you can't fly. It's dangerous. And we're supposed to believe he got into this Big Bird, flew it back to Washington 40 minutes, and then did this amazing downward spiral.
It would take a real skilled pilot, from what I understand, to hit
and
that
so
way.
A new thing that's happened in the movement is now we've got a lot of people with technical expertise.
Yes.
It's not just humanities scholars and a bunch of crazies on the internet, as they like to portray the movement.
Mm-hmm.
We have an organization called Veterans for 9/11 Truth, Pilots for 9/11 Truth, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And I've talked to some of those pilots, and I quote a couple of them in there, one of them who had 35 years experience flying these big birds, and he said, I couldn't have done that. I know Hani Hanjour could not. It's absolutely impossible. So just on that one point, that's all we need to know the official story is a lie.
Well, it seems to me that somebody who was really enterprising, like those people who just found all that treasure out in the Atlantic, could find the bird on the floor of the Atlantic, which is where it must be. You know, if it didn't hit the Pentagon, they must have ditched it over the ocean. I mean, where else would it have gone?
Yeah, but what I'm emphasizing here is that even the people who say, well, we think it was a 757, maybe it was even Flight 77, they will still say, but it was not under the control of Hani Hanjour. If it was 77, it had been taken over technologically by remote control.
Right. You point out in your previous book, The New Pearl Harbor, which is actually the one I have in front of me, the CBS News reported that Hani Hanjour was a particularly incompetent pilot, that the Arizona Flight School reported him at least 5 times to the FAA, not because they feared he was a terrorist, but because his English and flying skills were so bad.
Oh, dear.
That's right. And I reported, I mean, it was a lot of mainstream sources.
Right. That was a CBS News report, actually.
You know, people said, I couldn't believe that there's a big mystery how he got a license. And people were saying, I can't believe that guy had a license. He couldn't fly at all. So, you know, that's why I say, you know, people can fight all day over what really happened, but to know the official story is false. We don't have to know what really happened.
Right. We know the official story is a lie.
And there's another dimension to this with regard to the so-called phone calls from the passengers.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these calls occurred, I think all of them, in fact, between 25 and 40,000 feet. Key Dewdney, a well-known scientist from Canada who used to write a regular column for Scientific American, did experiments taking up those cell phones from 2001 up into small planes. Even in a small plane, he couldn't get anything above 7,000 or 8,000 feet. And all the anecdotal evidence, people who've tried it, say that in an airliner, you can't get a signal over 1,500 or 2,000 feet. And yet we're supposed to believe that these guys were having long conversations at 30,000 to 40,000 feet.
You mean the passengers who called their loved ones?
Yeah, on the cell phones. And that is just absolutely impossible. These signals were horizontal signals. They weren't sending them up. You got some leakage, so you could get them 7,000, 8,000 feet up in a small plane, but absolutely not at 30,000 or 40,000 feet. And, you know, I show in there the 9/11 Commission never even discussed that issue because Lee Hamilton, the vice chair, all he said when he was asked this question, he was said, well, I've been told that they can get a signal up as high as 30,000 feet. He had been told. You know, that was the amount of research.
So what does that imply? That either the people were lying that they received the phone calls from their loved ones
absolutely
or that they
not.
Were made at a lower altitude?
No,
or?
And as I point out, I go into some discussion of this in the book. Mm-hmm. There was another technology that had been perfected at the time that's called voice morphing. So they have machines there. You can, if you get several minutes from a person recorded, then these guys can take it. And if they recorded you, they could make it sound like you said anything mm-hmm. they wanted you to say. So
right.
they show a Washington Post story in 1999. Showed the voice of Colin Powell saying, I'm being treated well by my captors, and a general saying, gentlemen, we've called you together to tell you we're going to overthrow the United States government. And everybody in the room who knew this general would have sworn that was General Steiner, but of course it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you can read on the internet, it says, fool your mate. So that's how good they are. You can call your spouse. Somebody can call your spouse, and they'll think it's really from you.
Mm-hmm.
These things are this good. So that's the best explanation, that all these people were telling the truth. They really thought they had. And also, when you look at the content of the phone calls, they just don't sound authentic.
Hmm.
Like one guy, Tom Burnett, one of the most famous calls, Dina Burnett says she got 4 calls from Tom, and this is on Flight 93. On the last flight, on the last call, he said, you know, we've decided we're going to rush the hijackers, and then we're going to bring the plane down over Pennsylvania. So he knew he was most likely going to die in the next few minutes, you know, if all this was on the up and up. And then Dina says, oh, the kids are here. They want to talk to you. And he says, oh, no, tell them I'll talk to them later. So can you imagine somebody who's just ready to die, and he's got one last chance
to
talk
to his kids. He doesn't
want
to say anything to his kids.
So here he didn't have to reveal. He didn't know the kids' names.
Right.
Ooh,
so
that's pretty damning.
When you look at the content of all of these, like the other guy who gets on and talks and says, he calls, and his mother's sister, I believe, answers the phone and finds out it's Mark. And he says he wants to talk to his mom, and so sister says, come here, Alice, your son's on the phone. And she says, hello, Mark. And he says, hello, Mom, this is Mark Bingham.
Wow.
Have anybody, even in the most stressful situation, used his last name to talk
to introduce himself to his mom?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Actually, my dad, but that's a different story. You'd have to know my dad. He would use his last name to say, hi, it's your father, Joe Haynes.
He was pretty quirky.
He was a little quirky, it's
yeah.
true.
Now, the serious point here is that this is an example that people think, you know, they know there were hijackers. They think they know there were Al-Qaeda
right.
hijackers. But when you start looking at the evidence, it's all suspicious. So the cell phone calls and the seatback phone, and that's another story, they were the chief evidence. But then there were stuff found, you know, under the World Trade Center. So here comes a passport floating down with one of the hijackers' names on it. So
how convenient.
This. The plane goes into the building, creates this huge fireball.
Becomes a fireball, yeah, right.
And a passport floats out down to the ground, unsinged.
That's really interesting.
That's tricky.
And then the flight in Pennsylvania, United 93, the official story is it was heading down at a steep angle, 580 miles per
right,
hour.
Right, right.
Hit this soft soil in Pennsylvania, and, you know, there's no sign of a plane there. And the story was, well, it plunged clear into the earth.
Oh, please.
And so the tail wasn't even sticking up. But they
right.
found, you know, the story was these hijackers were wearing red bandanas.
Uh-huh.
They found a perfectly clean red bandana and another unsinged passport. So
wow.
it is so obviously planted evidence.
Mm-hmm. That's really a coinkydink, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and the journalists have reported it, said they found evidence that, yes, indeed, the hijackers were on the plane, because here's this bandana and here's
right.
the passport.
I want to give our callers an opportunity to interact again, and let's go ahead and do that now. Good morning. You're on the air.
Morning.
Morning.
Hi. I'm sort of getting more confused listening to all these strange pieces of evidence, but...